We are here with Don Was. Great to have you with us, Don.
Pleasure to be here, Pierre. Good to see you, man.
I cannot even begin to imagine what it was like going through this, but can you give us some idea?
It was a magical mystery tour, man. It's a big, first of all, it's a big thrill. You know, I'm a huge fan. I bought every Stones album the week it came out until the one I produced, which was Voodoo Lounge in 93. And I've been to every tour, you know, till I got free tickets because I knew them, you know. But I love Exile on Main Street. I'm a fanatic about it. So to get in there and get these tapes, and of course, nothing's marked, right? So they all have numbers on them, but I don't know what I'm listening to. And then and there maybe be some sloppy blues jam. And then there was a version of Wild Horses with Mick and Keith and a string quartet.
Wow.
That they don't even remember doing, which was it's awesome, man. And then Sophia Loren, which is kind of the crown jewel of missing songs from Exile. Everyone knows the title. No one's ever heard it. It's never been bootlegged. And there it was, you know, and a couple takes of that. Then One Reel had the 9 takes leading up to the final take of Honky Tonk Women.
Really?
Yeah, so you could chart the whole evolution of the song over a couple of days from where it started as country honk and how that riff started. And it was it's quite a revelation, you know. It was it started because Ian Stewart was playing honky tonk piano on it, and it was taking up all the space. So Keith is looking for some angle to enter the song. And the breakthrough comes when you pull Ian Stewart out and Keith's playing that honky tonk Women. Riff, you know.
Is there a central vault?
Yeah, yeah. It looks like the room at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's amazing, man. There's so much stuff.
You know, they've had such success unveiling this material, which it just leads me to wonder how much more is in there.
There's a ton of it, man. They could do 10 albums of unreleased songs easily and have it be great. You know, they could do 100 and have it be interesting.
Well, isn't it true that all the songs on Exile, first of all, aren't from those sessions in the south of France? Some date back to Let It Bleed. Some date back to the Sticky Finger sessions, or
well,
a portion of them.
I think some were written in that period.
Okay.
You know, I think Loving Cup and maybe Shine a Light were written in time to have gone on Sticky Fingers. Nothing really goes back to Let It Bleed, I don't think. But
okay.
It is a confused period, you know. I mean, they were making a lot of records, and they were extremely prolific. I mean, that's really one of the revelations about it, is that everyone's got this image of this wild party going on in the south of France, right? But somehow they managed to do the 18 songs that are on Exile, the 10 that are on the bonus tracks album, and another 30 that are in different forms of evolution, right? So you really got to be taking care of business to do that. They were extremely prolific. I mean, I don't know what the deal was. They were, you know, they had the hand of God on their shoulders or something.
They must have. When you step in to produce them, it's always been confusing to me as to how anyone can produce a band with this. Is it intimidating for you with this kind of legacy? Do you know, to be able to say,
yeah,
no, Keith, try it this way. Or no, Mick, why don't you try that vocal that way?
It was very intimidating, man. You know, I have to remind myself constantly, look, they're paying you to be helpful and be objective. So do your job. and that means forgetting about the iconography. But I'll be very honest with you. There isn't a day that's gone by when at some point I haven't looked at the 3 of these guys or the 5, you know, whoever's there, you know, 4 guys sitting there and going, oh, my God. And, you know, when we did Voodoo Lounge, a large portion of that was cut in my house in L.A. Wow, look who's at my house. but if you act that way, you know, you're
right.
Going to be a very effective producer.
Right. There, you told me a story about trying to get the sound right and actually looking for a 1972 Virgin copy of Exile. Can you tell us that story?
Well, I participated in the 1994 digital remastering of Exile on Main Street, and it was really hard to do because up until that point, when things went to CD, someone just took an album somewhere and a guy in Germany said it needs more treble, you know, and he might have been on the midnight shift. And that became the standard. And it just keeps, it's like the game of Operator, you know. By the time you get around 10 generations, it really doesn't sound like the way they originally intended it to sound. So what's the standard? If you're going to digitally remaster it for CD, for, you know, to be properly issued on a CD, what's your frame of reference? And we couldn't find the tapes. They're missing. The EQ'd master mixes of Exile on Main Street are like, God knows where they are, but they're not available to anybody. So it was kind of a conundrum. We gave it to probably the best mastering guy in the world, Bob Ludwig, and said, you know, do something great with it. And he made it sound like what was a modern record in 1994, which was virtually unrecognizable as Exile on Main Street. It's got its sound, and you can't really mess with it. So finally, we're just stymied. And we went to Goldmine Magazine, which is a record collector's magazine, and someone had Virgin Vinyl 1972 original pressings of Exile. So I called him up, had him come over to the house, and they had no idea that Mick and Keith were going to be sitting there. So they walk in, and they're just flummoxed, man. And we put those on, and it sounded great. It sounded amazing. And
did the guy stay there and listen to it with you, or did he just drop them?
Yeah, no, they hung out for a while, and we
because I'm just thinking of being the guy who just thinks he's going over to another guy's house and, you know, going to trade a record or two. And then he walks in and goes, Are you? No.
It was a great moment.
It has to be. Because I love it when a fan gets to meet their guy, yeah. You know, first of all. But but did that help? Listening to it totally helped.
You know, in fact, what we did was we sent the Virgin Vinyl copies to Bob Ludwig up in Maine and said, just copy this over, man, and this is what it should sound like. And fortunately, Bob had too much pride to just do that. So he matched it up. And in 1994, we became very close to the original intention. And it's been remastered now again, too, which I think you can hear a little bit more on it now, you know, which is cool.
Do you have a favorite song from the new selections that have been unveiled?
Well, I dig a lot of them for various reasons, but the one that really jumps out to me is the outtake of Loving Cup, which is just, it's loose and it's funky, and to me it epitomizes the very best of this edition of the Rolling Stones. You know, I mean, which I love. This is a great version, you know, the Mick Taylor, Bill Wyman version. Not to disparage Brian Jones or Daryl Jones or Ronnie Wood, but that was great. So Loving Cup, man. I love that one.
Last quick question. I read an interview with you where you wouldn't confirm nor deny, but has Mick Taylor stopped by to add a few extra things? Or are you still sticking with that same not confirming, not denying?
Well, no, I'll tell you, Pierre. He was there. He came in for one song. He played on – there were two songs that needed guitars. Keith played on one called Aladdin Story because he hadn't played on it, right? And conversely, Mick Taylor played on Plunder My Soul because he hadn't played on it. And he added these great – you can hear the lead lines, man. It harkens right back to the period. You really wouldn't know that they were new overdubs.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Thank you for spending some time with us.
Good to see you, man.